He was found beaten, naked, and stuffed into a cardboard box like garbage, his body wrapped in a plaid blanket, his hair crudely shaved, his bones bruised and broken. It was February 1957 in Philadelphia, and the city would never forget the look on his face. But they would forget his name, because no one knew it. For 65 years, he was only known as the boy in the box. No missing child reports matched. No grieving parents stepped forward. Even his fingerprints led nowhere. Investigators plastered morgue photos of his small face across the city in a desperate attempt to stir a memory. Nothing. He became America's most haunting unsolved child murder, his identity and his killer, vanishing like a ghost. Then, in 2022, against all odds, science finally gave the boy a name. But the question still lingers. If we know who he was, why don't we know who killed him? And more disturbingly, who worked so hard to keep his death buried for 6 decades? So if you think you've heard it all, you haven't. Hit follow on your favourite platform and leave us a comment, because the next story might just change the way you see everything. Don't miss a single twisted turn. Chapter 1. The Body in the Box Fox Chase, Philadelphia, February 25th, 1957. It was cold, bitter, the trees were bare, and the wind scraped through the leafless brush like a whisper of something unspeakable. Along Susquehanna Road, where farmland met woodland on the city's edge, a young man cutting through the brush stumbled upon what he thought was a discarded doll in a large J.C. Penney cardboard box. It wasn't a doll. It was the body of a little boy. He was around 4 to 6 years old. Naked, except for a tattered plaid flannel blanket wrapped around his small frame. His blonde hair had been roughly shaved. Some tufts still clung to the scalp, as if the act had been hurried. His lips were dry and cracked. His body was covered in bruises, old and new, with signs of malnutrition. His hands were pruned, as if he'd been submerged in water for hours before being dumped. The box had once contained a bassinet sold by J.C. Penney. It was traced to a local store. But back in the 1950s, sales records weren't digitally kept. Investigators couldn't trace the box to a buyer. The boy was transported to the city morgue, where police made a chilling decision. They would photograph him, post-mortem, and release the image to the public. It was a desperate gamble. But without fingerprints, dental records, or a name, they needed recognition. Someone had to know this child. The newspapers printed the haunting photo. Flyers were posted at every diner, gas station, school, and post office. Police visited orphanages and hospitals. Detectives, including a young officer named Bill Kelly, worked the case tirelessly. No one ever came forward. The boy was buried in a city potter's field, beneath a small marker that read, "Heavenly Father, bless this unknown boy." A city obsessed. In the months that followed, the city became obsessed with the case. Public tips flooded in. Psychics offered theories. A bartender said the boy looked like a child who had come in with a mysterious man once. A foster mother claimed she remembered seeing that same plaid blanket. One lead pointed to a nearby foster home that raised children in poor conditions. The owner had once purchased bassinets similar to the one the box had contained. A social worker testified about abuse. But no one could conclusively link the child to the property or to any of the children who had passed through its doors. The foster home theory died in the cold, like every other lead. The bizarre burial practice. In 1998, 41 years after his discovery, the boy's body was exhumed for DNA extraction. The case had long gone cold, but forensic technology had advanced. Investigators hoped mitochondrial DNA from the boy's teeth could provide a match, if they could find a family member. The results led nowhere. No matches were found in the limited databases of the time. Still, a renewed effort emerged. America's unknown child, they called him. His body was reburied at Ivy Hill Cemetery in a proper grave, donated by local funeral homes, complete with a headstone. Volunteers tended the site. Flowers and teddy bears appeared year-round. Local residents whispered stories of his ghost being seen at night. For decades, he became a legend, but not a solved one. A decade of dead ends. From the late 90s through the 2000s, every few years brought new theories and new false hopes. Theory number one, the carnival kidnapper. A tipster claimed a travelling carnival had passed through the area in the winter of 1957, and a child matching the boy's description had gone missing. Investigators tracked down the carnival's route. Nothing came of it. Theory number two, the Nevada link. A woman in Las Vegas contacted police, saying her mother had bought a boy years ago and that he had died in a bath. She claimed the body was discarded in Philadelphia. But her story fell apart under scrutiny. She had a long history of mental illness. Theory number three, the CIA cover-up. A retired federal agent insisted the boy's murder was connected to secret government medical experiments on children. He had no proof, just paranoia. The theory never gained traction. Still, the boy's image remained one of the most distributed in American history, circulated by the FBI, the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, and dozens of private sleuths. But none of the thousands of missing child reports from 1950-1960 matched his profile. How does a child vanish without ever being reported? 2022, the year of the name. In late 2022, the Philadelphia Police Department's Homicide Division, under Captain Jason Smith, confirmed they had used advanced genealogical DNA testing on the boy's remains, once again exhumed, and finally cracked the one mystery they could solve. His name was Joseph Augustus Zarelli, born January 13, 1953. Died sometime in February 1957, just 4 years old. He was the son of a teenage mother and a father from a prominent local family. Police declined to release the parents' names. Both are now deceased, but investigators confirmed that Joseph was never reported missing. Let that sink in. No one, not one adult in his life, ever told police he was gone. The family tree that broke the case. How did they identify him? A team led by genetic genealogist Barbara Ray Venter, famous for helping crack the Golden State Killer case, used a minute sample of Joseph's DNA to build an ancestral profile. They started with distant cousins, then triangulated matches on public ancestry databases. It took months, but eventually they pinpointed a local Philadelphia family. Relatives were interviewed. One older relative confirmed the story. There was a child no one ever talked about. A shame. Joseph had been born into silence and died in silence. The cruelty of invisibility. We now know who he was, but not why he died. Authorities haven't named a suspect. No charges have been filed. No arrests made. Police have implied that at least one parent is suspected of either directly causing his death or allowing it. But without physical evidence, living witnesses, or documentation, there may never be justice. And even worse, some surviving relatives have refused to cooperate. Shame, secrecy, or protection of family name still hold power, even decades after the fact. A name restored, a mystery unchanged. In December 2022, a small ceremony was held at Joseph's grave at Ivy Hill Cemetery. His name was etched into the stone. For the first time, mourners could call him by name. His real name. Not America's unknown child. Not the boy in the box, Joseph. Reporters wept. Detectives who had spent their entire careers chasing shadows stood in silence. But closure? That's a luxury no one gets in this case. Chapter 2. The Secrets That Kept Him Buried. A name whispered, never spoken. The name Joseph Augustus Zarelli brought momentary peace to a decades-old wound, but also new grief, new rage, and new unanswered questions. The announcement by Philadelphia police in December 2022 may have closed the mystery of identity, but it opened the greater question. Why was he discarded like trash? And even more disturbing, how did the people who brought him into this world manage to hide what they had done for over 65 years? The mother, according to sources close to the investigation, Joseph's mother was just a teenager when she gave birth to him in January 1953. Her family, reputedly Catholic, conservative, and middle class, hid the pregnancy. To avoid social shame, she was allegedly sent away to give birth in secret. The records are sealed, but investigators found hospital documentation of the birth. Joseph was given his father's surname, Zarelli. It's believed that Joseph never received a birth certificate. He was unofficial, a child born into silence, carried by shame. After returning home, the mother may have kept the boy for some time, but authorities will not confirm the length or details of custody. What's chilling is that no one, not family, not neighbours, not city workers, ever reported a child by that name living in any known household. She never reported him missing. She never claimed him dead. She never mentioned him again. The father. Joseph's father came from a prominent Philadelphia family, wealthy, influential. According to genealogical research, he had other children, Joseph's half-siblings, some of whom are still alive today. Detectives say the father is deceased, but members of his extended family, upon being contacted, refused to speak on the record. One relative stated, "We don't want to be involved with that story." Another hung up mid-conversation, but there were whispers from old neighbours, from people who knew the family in the 50s, that the father knew what happened, that Joseph was a problem, that the mother was forced to keep it quiet. The silence wasn't just personal, it was systemic, protection, power, reputation. In 1957, those things could cover up anything, even the murder of a child. How did he die? Let's revisit the forensics. Joseph's body showed signs of severe head trauma, multiple bruises in varying stages of healing emaciation, pruned fingers and toes, consistent with prolonged water exposure, hair crudely cut post-mortem or in haste. There were no broken bones that clearly caused death, but blunt force trauma to the head was believed to be the cause. One theory: Joseph was beaten to death, his body cleaned, his hair shaved to hide lice or identity, and placed in the box after being wrapped in the blanket. Another: he drowned or was submerged in water, then beaten to simulate a fall or accident. There's no official ruling. The autopsy file is incomplete, but what remains tells a story of pain, neglect, and silence. Theories revisited. Now that we know his name, some older theories carry new weight. 1. The foster home connection. The home operated near the crime scene in 1957, known for taking in unwed mothers. Investigators believe Joseph may have passed through there. The home had previously purchased bassinets, linking them indirectly to the box he was found in. If Joseph's mother gave him up or placed him temporarily at the facility, he could have died in their care. Staff at the time were questioned but never charged. It's possible the foster home helped cover it up, or that Joseph died there accidentally and no one wanted the bad press. 2. Parental abuse and disposal. If Joseph was kept by his biological mother or father, or someone else in the family, he may have suffered abuse over time. Malnutrition and bruising suggest long-term harm, not just a single violent outburst. the shaved head and washed body point to someone trying to erase identity. And the box? That wasn't random. It was deliberate, quick, cold, no arrests, no closure. In 2023, Captain Jason Smith told the press, "We have suspicions, strong ones, about who may have been responsible, but we lack the evidence needed for a prosecution." That's the cruelty of time. Witnesses die. Memories fade. Evidence is lost. Statutes of limitations don't apply to murder, but the passage of decades erodes everything else. The people who killed Joseph may have already died, or they may be walking free, too old or too protected to ever face justice. But it's not just a matter of criminal law. It's a matter of moral cowardice. Someone in that family knew and said nothing. Victim's voice, who finally gave this boy a name. The breakthrough came not from police, but from Barbara Ray Venter, a retired attorney turned genetic detective. She had previously used her expertise in DNA genealogy to catch Joseph James DeAngelo, the Golden State Killer. In Joseph Zarelli's case, Ray Venter worked with small, degraded samples of mitochondrial DNA, passed down through the maternal line. She uploaded the profile to GEDmatch and FamilyTree DNA, public databases where users voluntarily share genetic data. What she found was a tangled family tree, dozens of third and fourth cousins, and buried in the branches. One small clue. A match led to a cousin who recalled a family secret. A baby born in 1953, never spoken of again. From there, Ray Venter and her team built the tree backward and forward, eventually confirming Joseph's identity through multiple triangulated matches. This wasn't luck. This was relentless science. She gave him back his name. Not the police, not the family. A stranger. The public's reaction. Philadelphia was stunned. For 65 years, he was the city's nameless son. Schoolchildren knew the story. Old-timers remembered where they were when the flyers went up. When his name was revealed, the city mourned anew. "Joseph deserved better," said Detective Kelly, who had followed the case since the 70s. The local paper ran a headline that read simply, "We know your name, baby boy. A legacy of shame and hope." The boy in the box case is now taught in forensic science programs. It changed how police work cold cases. It inspired countless volunteers who work to identify the nameless and the lost. Joseph Zarelli became a symbol of what happens when society fails its most vulnerable, then forgets about them. But he also became a symbol of redemption. That even decades later, truth still matters. His grave now bears his name. Strangers visit daily. Flowers are placed. Songs are sung. And somewhere in Philadelphia, perhaps at a kitchen table or in an old bedroom drawer, there are people who still know more than they've said. Bonus: victim's voice. Who finally gave this boy a name? It wasn't a detective who solved the mystery. It wasn't a relative. It was science. And a stranger who refused to forget. Barbara Ray Venter worked quietly, obsessively, piece by piece. She didn't know Joseph, but she believed he deserved his name. Deserved justice. Deserved a voice. And when the name Joseph Augustus Zarelli was announced, it was her voice that spoke it aloud. This is the power of DNA genealogy. This is the power of not giving up.